Bits and Bytes from the high-tech world with Peter Griffin, who is in Mountain View, California. He's at the Google I.O. 2018 event. It's actually a developers conference, but from the images I've seen, Peter, it looks a bit more like a rock concert, and Google are really banking on AI, artificial intelligence, which we discussed last week. That's very much part of their future, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We know Google mainly as a search company, the biggest search engine in the world. They do a heck of a lot of advertising right across the internet, and that's where all of their revenue comes from. But they're just proliferating into all sorts of categories, from virtual reality headsets to mobile phones. They've got their own Pixel phones in the market now. But underpinning it all is this move to artificial intelligence. So teaching machines to learn things about the real world, and are using that for voice translation. They can translate through multiple languages now using their app. Image recognition is a big one through Google Lens, which is built into cameras on smartphones. Search engine results, the advertising, customization, all of that is being transformed by artificial intelligence. And I think that's really the theme through all of this. No one big new product reveal as such, but making the machine learning deliver better results across all of those products we use, like Gmail, Google Maps, and Google News.
Well, Peter, as you said, Google are dominant in search, mapping, as well as photos, email, video, and they've got their mobile platform, Android. And if the future of artificial intelligence is all about data, well, Google are currently the masters of that. What specifically have you seen so far in terms of a service, a way that I'll be interacting with Google in the future? What have you seen that's really kinky, that's made you go, wow?
Well, if there's one example that I think epitomizes where Google is going with artificial intelligence, it's a service called Google Duplex that the chief executive of Google, Sundar Pichai, demoed on stage.
Let's say you want to ask Google to make you a haircut appointment on Tuesday between 10 and noon. What happens is the Google Assistant makes the call seamlessly in the background for you. So what you're going to hear is the Google Assistant actually calling a real salon to schedule the appointment for you. Let's listen.
How can I help you?
Hi, I'm calling to book a women's haircut for a client. I'm looking for something on May 3rd.
Sure, give me 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, what time are you looking for around?
So what we heard there was Google Assistant making a call to a hair salon on behalf of someone. Apparently that is a real-life example that actually happened. And I think that they're almost ready to get this technology to the point where you can call a doctor's surgery, a restaurant, or a hair salon for those sort of simple examples where you need to make an appointment. And the reason they're doing this is apparently 60% of businesses in the U.S., are not set up for taking appointments online. So a lot of small businesses just don't have the facility to do it. So they're getting a lot of calls through from people just asking to set up appointments. So they're using the natural language processing intelligence in Google Assistant to set up that call, make that call, and be able to understand what the real person in the business is saying. So if they can pull this off, I think it's a massive advance. I think particularly in our country, dealing with our language and accent, there's going to be some challenges around that. And people have raised issues about, for instance, what's it going to be like when there are bots calling businesses all the time? What are the ethics of that? Do they have to identify that it's a bot? What are the legal implications of all of that? So you could go down a rabbit hole thinking about the implications of it, but just the fact that they're at this point now with Google Assistant, with the natural language recognition, being able to what they call disambiguate voices and handle things like ums and ahs and fillers shows that the technology has got pretty good. And that's through training the system, listening to hours and hours and hours of phone calls, how people talk on the phone, how they phrase things, getting the context from all of those different things, that's making it more intelligent.
Yeah, and then I guess coupled with a calendar app, you have your inventory in terms of your spare time. You tell the assistant to book you in at this particular time. It directly transcribes that appointment into your calendar. I mean, it's powerful stuff, and I can see for a business, I guess the opportunity there to sell their products and wares. If they're a service provider, they can sell their inventory really easily. Now, Android, I see, has introduced some really cool features around essentially reducing the time that you're connected to the network. And the one that really caught my eye is the fact you can now put your phone down. If you put your screen face down on a table, it will actually go into do not disturb mode, which is brilliant.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool feature. There have been similar things like this on the market, but nothing as direct and simple as that. And look, Android P is their next big operating system. It's just being released now. And really surprising there to see how big Google has gone on what they're calling digital wellness. And they're saying this is in response to people complaining about how connected they are and the stress that's causing in their lives. There are things now within Android's operating system that, for instance, allow you to see exactly how much time you're spending in each app. You can set limits on the amount of minutes or hours you're going to be able to spend in each app per day. When you go to bed at night, you can set, say, at 10 p.m. for the phone's screen to go grayscale, to cut down on the glare that you're exposed to late at night, which is bad for people's sleeping patterns. So there's all these things that beforehand you'd have to have relied on a third-party app to do, to monitor your app usage, that type of thing. So they're saying here we're identifying a growing problem with people overusing their devices. We're going to build these things into the operating system so that people can manage their screen time more effectively.
Now, what's happening with Google News? Because it sounds like they've developed an interesting way now that you can subscribe to sort of third-party news providers. And we've all, I guess at the moment, we've been provoked by every Tom, Dick and Harry to make a contribution to get a subscription with digital news providers. And it's a right pain in the posterior. Google seem to think there's an opportunity here for them to sort of, I guess, sit in the middle, clip the ticket and provide essentially a revenue to some of these news providers.
That's right. Look, it's a small part of their business in terms of revenue. They don't make any money out of Google News. But for the last 15 years, it basically has been the biggest news aggregator on the internet. So when you do search results in Google, Google News results will be embedded in those search results. So they've completely overhauled Google News. It'll be a new app. It should be available in the next week or so. I've been trialing it on my own phone. And as you say there, one of the interesting features of it is that it allows you, if the publisher, say the likes of a New Zealand Herald or the Dominion Post in our country, if they have integrated this into their paywall technology, with one click from within Google News, if you like the look of the content of that publisher, you'll be able to subscribe if that organization offers a digital subscription. So at the moment, paywalls are few and far between in New Zealand, but the likes of the Washington Post here, the New York Times, they're already implementing this with Google News. And Google is pitching it as a way, a new channel for publishers to try and pick up subscription revenue, which is really what they need to do to make news sustainable in the digital world. And we've really struggled in our country with advertising eroding. They need to get this right. And Google is saying 15 million people are coming to our site every week to get news. Here's a way to build loyalty and get support from your readers.
Any obvious antidotes to the fake news movement? What are they doing there in terms of provenance and authenticity with news stories?
Well, at the moment on Google News, they're using artificial intelligence to serve up what they consider to be trusted sources. And there are up to 80,000 sources that are published on Google News at any one time. And the ones that they consider the most trusted sort of rise to the top. What they've introduced is this new part of Google News called full coverage. So if there's a big breaking news story, for instance, this week it's been Trump pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal. So what they'll allow you to do is do a deep dive into the coverage from every aspect. So they'll have a timeline of how the story has developed. They'll have snippets from Trump's Twitter account, from other sources, key quotes that people have made who are involved in the story. So you get all of the sources in one place. And this is really to try and combat the growing issue of, in the social media world in particular, being in that echo chamber where you're reliant on a handful of sources to get your news. They're saying, we want to give it to you all in one place. You can customize Google News with a briefing at the top, 5 stories for the day that, based on your preferences within your Google account, they think you want to read. But then you'll be able to dive into a very contextualized view of a particular story. So Google News is going to look a lot more visual in future. It's going to be a lot more responsive and localized to what you need, but also trying to cut through the noise out there when it comes to contentious stories in particular.
Now, Google Home gets a display, so we're going to see essentially like the mini TV screen as part of those Home Assistant boxes. I think Amazon already have one of these. Obvious, not really that surprising, is it?
No, pretty cool. I had a look at these just today, and it does really add an extra element to a smart speaker when it has a screen on it, because you can use things like Google's Duo service, which is a free video calling service. So if you have a friend who has one of these boxes, you can video call them from the smart speaker, and there are players like Lenovo who are rolling these out. Now, the big problem, and I just had a meeting with the head of Google Home, the head of hardware here at Google, and they're not officially available in New Zealand at the moment, the likes of Google Home and Google Mini, these smart speakers. And I asked them about the roadmap for that, not available in 2018 in New Zealand either. So people are bringing these devices in and using them, buying them online, and they're relatively cheap, particularly the Google Mini, but not officially available in New Zealand, because a lot of these artificial intelligence-driven services, they need local integration, for instance, into retailers. Here, they've just announced today a deal with Starbucks where you can just say to your Google Assistant, order me my usual coffee, and it'll be waiting for you on the counter at Starbucks when you go into the store. So all of that sort of really smart stuff that requires integration with retailers and service providers, we're probably just a bit too small to get that early. So won't be happening in 2018. Amazon's devices are available in New Zealand. So that will limit to some extent the experience we have with artificial intelligence in products like Google Assistant. The likes of Maps, for instance, those features will roll out to us, and they have announced a new tie-up between Google Assistant and Maps, where, for instance, when you're driving down the road, navigating using Google Maps, you'll be able to be talking to the Google Assistant to launch a text message or give someone your estimated time of arrival. That's all now integrated into Google Maps. And I think we'll see more of that AI crossing over out of the AI app into other Google services.
Yeah, lots more AI-powered life hacks. And I can't help feel that there's lots of convenience here, but I guess the other side is how reliant we're going to be in Google in the future. Is that a concern, Peter, just briefly? Do we need to be aware here, based on the fact of post-Cambridge Analytica and the fact that we will be giving them so much more data in terms of voice location and whether I'm going to see my Polish masseur or not on a Friday at 2:30?
Yeah, look, definitely Sundar Pichai opened up, I think, very much with that in mind, saying we've got a responsibility. This is great, all of this technology, but we have a lot of power here. So I think they're conscious of that. I've been talking to teams here at Google who are working on things like algorithmic bias, so making sure that the algorithms aren't biased against particular people. And as human beings, we're biased anyway, we just can't avoid that. So making sure that those biases aren't reflected to a great degree in algorithms that are making important decisions about people's lives. And when it comes to whether you're getting your Starbucks coffee delivered on time, it doesn't really matter that much. But when Google starts making more fundamental decisions about people and using that underlying AI to power lots of businesses and other organizations, because they open source a lot of these tools like TensorFlow and other bits of software to allow other organizations to use that intelligence, that is a real responsibility. I think they're mindful of it, but the reality is with something like Google Assistant, the real theme I've seen over the last week is just how pervasive that's going to become on the mobile, on the desktop, in the smart home, in your camera, and every device you use. And that offers an amazing experience in terms of convenience, but you're dead right about Google being front and center, not only as the biggest AI company in the world, but having the most data on us.
Well, thanks, Peter Griffin, who travelled to Mountain View, California to the Google I/O 2018 Developers Conference, courtesy of Google.